Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, Gaias and fans of Voices of the Sacred Feminine. I sure missed getting together with you last Wednesday, but I was recharging my batteries along with husband Roy along the coast of Washington State among all the tall green trees, the wildlife, and the cool breezes off the ocean. It was truly a nice change of pace from the hectic life in Los Angeles. People smiled. They didn't seem to hate their job or helping you. I really felt like I was on another planet. And to make up for missing last week's show, we'll have a special Monday show next Monday on April 26th, and Eleanor Gadden will finally be with us. This is the third time we've scheduled her, and I'm sure this time will be the charm. You'll actually hear her being interviewed. She's a hoot, and I'm sure the wait will be worthwhile. But with Earth Day tomorrow, our show is dedicated to honoring Mother Earth, and our guest tonight, Beryl Hall, author of Sophia's Web, is talking to us on the topic of reclaiming wholeness in a divided world. And part of that conversation will be about the sustainable living movement he's involved in, including permaculture and transition town movements, and the political implications of these ideas. Even What's the Buzz tonight is partially dedicated to Earth Day themes. And if you're not familiar with What's the Buzz, it's when we talk about things going on out there in the world that are in sync with or opposing ideals of the sacred feminine. And these ideals include partnership, justice, balance, harmony, social justice, tolerance, negotiation, wisdom, and certainly not exploiting Mother Nature, Mother Earth, her resources, or her people. You've been telling me you want to hear more about What's the Buzz, or to go in depth a bit more and not to rush it toward the end of the show when our guests are so informative and we have a jam-packed show, so I'm working on that. And so you'll know what's ahead in What's the Buzz. Our topics tonight are going to be, first of all, thinking of Earth Day, and I'm sure Beryl will have some thoughts on this, would you give up urban life and live in the country? Second article we're going to talk about a little bit is Dow Chemical is sponsoring a run for water, but they're not fooling activists. Activists are fighting back, and I want you to know about that. A little bit closer to home, maybe for most of us, is are flea treatments dangerous for your pet? Now, you know, it's not exactly under, sacred feminine ideals, you know, obviously. But, of course, we love our noble beasts. And I don't know about you, but I think I was doing some things that weren't the best for my pet. And I want to make sure you know about that, too. We'll offer some tips to help wildlands this Earth Day. It's an article by Michael Carroll from the Wilderness Society. And off the track a bit, but I want to mention it, there's a witch museum opening in Salem, a new witch museum. We'll talk about that a bit. An Iranian cleric is actually stating earthquakes are caused by promiscuous women. And a 10-year-old who was raped by her father in Mexico is sparking abortion debates. And because goddess spirituality is about the equal rights of women, and for so long, women's roles as life givers, our reproductive abilities have been used against us to control us. So I want to share the latest deceptive, dangerous, and misleading tactics of anti-choice groups to thwart abortion rights. Besides, of course, condoning the killing of abortion doctors and threatening the staff who work in these women's clinics. So stay with me till the bottom of the show. We'll cover these themes. We're going to open the show to callers and share some important announcements and some great music. So remember, to speak to me or my guest, please call 718-766-4662. I know from your emails, a lot of you listen from the archives, but if you are here live with us tonight, please do call in and say hello and offer your comments. And thanks to our new artists, who debuted in the last couple weeks. You have generously allowed me to play your music for the enjoyment of my listeners. Tonight's opening snippet you heard was Song to Bridget from the very talented local LA artist Lisa Thiel. But if you want more information about the music of Lisa, please go to her website. It's sacreddream.com. And you'll be hearing a lot more of her music because, you know, there's not much she does I don't like. It's all so beautiful. And at the bottom of the hour, if there's time for a more ethereal sound for our closing prayer, you'll get to hear Leah Scallon's music from her CD, The Sounds of Sirius. And for those of you who have asked me where I get my information for the show or my classes, well, oftentimes it's listeners who send in articles or comments they want me to share. Other times I go to my favorite sources who I trust are reporting truth and accuracy, which seems to be in short supply these days. You've asked me who my favorites are. Well, here are a few. My two favorite television commentators are Rachel Maddow and Keith Olbermann, both on MSNBC. And the Ed Show on MSNBC is quickly becoming a favorite. He's sort of your everyman, speaking for the people, not the corporations, and he's not afraid to call out lying Republicans or teabaggers who just don't have their facts right because they're too busy listening to Fox News. Or go to The Nation magazine online or to The Alternet online or the blog of Phyllis Chesler. All good sources for what's happening out there in the world in keeping with ideals working for and against ideals of the sacred feminine, women, Mother Earth, both locally and globally. But now, let's get to tonight's guest. He's been patiently waiting. Let me tell you a little bit about Burl Hall. He's a counselor with 15 years' experience working with adults having mental health issues and in-home counseling working with families having children at risk for out-of-home placement. Burl is also involved in the sustainable living movement through his involvement in the permaculture and transition town movements. He writes nonfiction, fiction, and poetry where his message projects a universe that's more verb than noun. Burl has had lifelong experiences starting around the age of 5 with a goddess whom he's called Sophia or Wisdom. This goddess has taught Burl that being the seeming infinite variety of appearances is a profound unity that does not deny diversity but supports it. These experiences have led him to writing a book with the goal of uniting the various religions to each other and to the quantum physics of scientists such as David Bohm. And his website, and we'll repeat it again later, but just so that we have it out there, Sophia's Web, sophiasweb.ning.com, sophiasweb.ning.com. Well, Burl, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on for Earth Day.
Thank you, Karen.
Well, you seem like you, I felt you would be the perfect guest because you're so much more in sync, you know, than so many of us city dwellers. And, you know, I'm hoping that you can, you know, sort of enlighten us a little bit. But let's start with your book, Sophia's Web. Do you want to tell us more about, you know, who Sophia is to you, or you know, what our listeners should know about Sophia? I mean, maybe little known stuff about Sophia for, you know, the more advanced listeners.
Right. Well, Sophia for me, I chose the name of Sophia basically because the name was a Christianized version of Wisdom, which in the Hebrew translations of the Bible was Chokhmah Panai, meaning wisdom and understanding. In Greek translations, that was translated to Sophia. And that had special significance for me because, you know, growing up, seeing a lot of the evangelists and that sort of thing, I became sort of angry with the religion, and I really wanted to make peace with it. So a lot of my reasoning for Sophia was to help myself make peace with Christianity. But also, and when you mentioned that I tend to see the universe as more verb than noun, I actually had an experience. I was in seventh grade, Mr. Hannaford's class, his name was, where we were learning about Greek mythology, and then I learned about the Greek Athena, which was also wisdom. And I automatically thought, well, wisdom is female primarily because she conceives thought. So again, you know, that kind of ties back into my idea that the universe itself is more verb than noun.
Okay. Okay. And now going back to Sophia, I mean, well, we know that holy wisdom, you know, before all of the sacred texts were translated, Sophia was actually either gender neutral or female before all of a sudden wisdom, you know, or the holy, you know, before it became male, right?
Mm-hmm. Right.
So when you said starting at around five, it seems like you had an experience. I mean, did you literally have some sort of auditory or visual experience of a god?
Yeah, it was more, I guess visual. But I did think that I had like a imaginary friend, a lady friend, and this person or this being or whatever, I don't know what to call it, actually started appearing again in dreams when I was in my 40s. But the initial experiences were back when I was five.
Did you ever ask her who she was, or did in your wisdom knowing, do you think she was an angel, or do you think she was a divine feminine, or what would be your best guess?
Well, I think, I think that ultimately she was an image of wisdom. I don't think that, you know, first of all, I don't think wisdom herself is perceivable. Okay, she's beyond human perception. But I do think that the world, the universe, is also very metaphoric. And so, you know, images will come to us as metaphors for deeper processes.
Mm-hmm.
Am I making sense with that?
Well, yeah, because, I mean, that's how dreams are. You know, dream symbolism.
Exactly.
I mean, they represent something else. And it's not the same for everyone. So, you know, these books, you know, that seem to do that, you know, aren't always accurate. So, no, I'm right with you there.
Okay, good. Because I think a lot of times folks have, you know, some problems understanding that. I guess that's another piece to my work that's a bit different from the mainstream, is that I do tend to see metaphor as primary over the more concrete thinking.
Mm-hmm, over the literal, yeah.
Right, over the literal. And basically, when I say I look at the universe as verb, I'm also saying that I'm looking at it as metaphor, because I think in imagery, like, for example, men and women both are metaphors for deeper processes that are basically universal and part of all nature.
Okay, well, I'm still trying to wrap my mind around the universe as verb. I'm going back to, you know, grade school English. A verb shows action. Is
mm-hmm.
it because the universe is constantly evolving, or is that sort of the where the verb thing comes in?
Yeah, the universe is constantly evolving and manifesting. And that actually kind of gets into David Bohm's idea of the unmanifest. The unmanifest, according to physicist David Bohm, the unmanifest implicate order is basically akin to an infinite ocean of energy, in which there is no dualities. Okay, and then if you look at that in the context of spiritual text, whether it be the first chapter of Genesis, the Kogi, which is a Native American tribe in South America, Aluna, or or the Rig Veda or whatever. I mean, you basically get the same story over and over and over, where you basically start off with a ocean or a darkness that is basically infinite, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then from that, what unfolds is the manifest. So in Genesis, for example, God says, let there be light, which is the beginning of manifestation.
So like the Big Bang, sort of?
Well, yeah, it's the Big Bang, except for, you know, and, you know, this is another place where I become a little bit more eccentric in terms of it doesn't happen in time, it happens here and now. So this moment, in other words, is unfolding from this unmanifest implicate order. Okay, so in other words, it's happening now.
So not millions of years ago, but it's still happening right now.
Yeah. I mean, our conversation is Genesis. In other words, this conversation exists in potential, but then it's manifesting. It's you know, God saying, "Let there be light." In other words, you and I start talking.
So, forgive me, because this is a new concept to me. So if I sound like an idiot, I apologize.
No.
Are we almost talking about like parallel parallel time or something?
I don't know if it's parallel time as much as it is. I mean, I guess it could be. I never have thought of it in terms of parallel time. I think it's more, for me, the way that I envision it, there is, at our foundations, there is basically this infinity. And infinity is kind of a wild concept, because infinity, no two things can exist side by side. Okay, but it's just one massive wholeness, so to speak. Okay.
Okay.
Does
that sort of tie into the subtitle of your book, which is Reclaiming Wholeness in a Divided World?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, so you're going to have to spoon feed me a little bit. Talk to me like I'm in kindergarten. So explain that to me.
Understanding unity in a divided world. Well, actually, that does take many, many forms. As you mentioned that, I'm thinking of the image of an egg, a fertilized egg. That egg is one cell to start off with. Then it's penetrated by the sperm, and then it begins to unfold into various cells. Okay. So that is kind of akin to what happens even in Genesis, because what happens in Genesis, let there be light, then there's a division, and then it becomes a multitude.
Okay, all right, that makes total sense, yeah.
Okay, so it's basically the same process, but it also happens when any baby is conceived. So what's universal is also individual, which is another concept. Hopefully I'm not jumping around too much here. But,
Now tell me if this is where you're going. I have this saying that I use pretty often when I'm out giving talks to people about the sustainability and potential of the sacred feminine. And I always say she's like a big umbrella that we all can stand under, because she's about diversity, she's about tolerance. I kind of think that's what you're saying. She's, you know, the big umbrella is the wholeness, but we're all sort of individuated. You know, we all don't believe exactly the same thing, but we have enough of a piece of that big umbrella that we can stand under there in harmony, rather than kill each other saying, my God's the only God, my God's the right God.
Yeah, that's exactly right, because that's one of the things I do in Sophia's Web, is I really take a look at the various creation stories. Like I go into the Rig Veda as well as Genesis and the Tao Te Ching and you know, some of the native spiritualities, and also some of the pre-Roman Empire stuff, like out of Egypt and that sort of thing. And show a consistency across those myths. So, you know, as I'm saying that, I'm thinking of the actual meaning of the term religion, because religion isn't so much about institutions, but again, it too is a verb and actually comes from the French religiere, meaning to connect. And to me, that's where religion truly is. So, you know, whether
or where it
you know,
should have been, but it's used
or,
to just divisiveness though now.
Well,
you said religion was meant to, you know, has the meaning, the connotation of connection, but it's
right.
used in society today as a divisive instrument.
Right, exactly, and I think that's where we're missing the boat. As you're talking about this, you know, I wonder what the function of that is, and I think for human beings, I think there's a function to the divisiveness, and you know, it becomes, I guess, and I'm not an expert on this, but to me, it's kind of like we need to be in charge over others more so than allowing things to unfold according to their nature. Am I making sense with that?
Well, I'm not sure. Let me ask a question.
Okay.
I mean, I see religion as an institution by which the male status quo controls other people's behavior and keeps them under their thumb. I can understand maybe in the very beginning it was maybe used to as a means to civilize people. I don't know, maybe. But it's sort of warped out of that good intention to tell us not to kill one another, and it's moved into politics and all sorts of things where it doesn't belong. So I don't know. I think I got sidetracked myself.
No, that's fine, because actually, to me, what you're describing is more the noun definition of religion. In other words, you have in today's age, it's Muslim against Christian. You know, back in the Middle Ages, it was more like Christian against Jew or whatever. You know. So I think that's what you're getting at in terms of religion as institution, whereas I, again, and I, you know, if you look in the dictionary, the origin of the word religion is put religiere, and it's French, and it literally means to connect. So what's happening with all these divisive religions is that they're actually doing just the opposite of what the original definition of religion is about.
Well, then I would say from this point in our conversation, religion is really nature, because nature is what is where we see our interconnection.
Exactly.
So is that really at the heart of Sophia's Web, that nature is really religion, and throw out this man-made dogma?
Right. Yes. I would say that nature is intimately connected, and it's connected through its diversity. And gee, I hope I'm not jumping topics here, but basically, nature itself, as I said, it works on diversity, but the diversity is a unity. For example, I live on a wooded lot, so when I go outside, every step I take, I'm basically walking into a different environment. I mean, there's different kinds of grasses, there's a different tree, you know, and so on and so forth.
You're talking about an ecosystem. So
I'm talking
one,
about an ecosystem.
Yeah, it's one
right.
big ecosystem with all sorts of flora and fauna in it. That's
exactly.
The wholeness. The ecosystem is the wholeness. The divided world is the flora, all the different diverse flora and fauna.
Right, but it's the diversity that makes it work, okay?
Because it all, yeah, because they all need each other. It's like, you know, legs of a stool kind of a thing.
Right, exactly. And see, that, in my humble opinion, is where humanity is really into a lot of danger, and this kind of boils into the sustainability movement. Because in a lot of the farming practices, for example, through genetic engineering, through monoculture cropping, and which is planting rows and rows and rows of the same stuff, you're actually making the ecosystem vulnerable for runoff, for pollution, and so on. So
you deplete the soil, basically.
You deplete the soil. So you're really killing off the productivity of the land through monoculture cropping. And, you know, and again, it's being anti-natural.
Okay. Well, and I know from a friend of mine who actually, she was so brave. Can you believe she lived in Hemet, California, had never been on a farm in her life, but she felt like she was being called to go to Whidbey Island in Washington, and she actually started a permaculture farm, and she taught herself off the internet. And I was, you know, she is like a shero to me. I can't believe, you know, she had that much courage. But she has taught me the little I know about permaculture, which is you plant things that support each other. One plant will help maybe the chickens, or one plant will help a tree, or everything's sort of interdependent.
Mm-hmm. Right. Everything is interdependent. And in a system such as that, you know, you don't have to use a lot of chemicals. Like, for example, I have problems with Japanese beetles on my cherry tree. One of my plans for this year is probably to get some chickens to take care of the beetles, you know. And so, you know, that'll serve a couple of functions, you know, because not only is there a wide variety of life in the system, but also everything that you have has a multitude of functions. For example, the chicken not only gives you eggs, perhaps meat, but also, you know, it takes care of bugs for you. It produces compost and so on and so forth. So again, you know, everything, and that includes us as human beings, have multiple functions in a highly varied environment.
Well, Burl, maybe I'm jumping ahead here, but my thoughts now are going to, if you're going to farm like that, then you must hate people like, I don't know, is Monsanto one of the,
right.
you know, organizations like that? Do you want to talk a little bit to how they are destroying Mother Nature and farming?
Monsanto is probably one of the most dangerous corporations going. They have had representatives sitting on the last two presidents, including Obama. And, you know, there's a lot of people who I talk to don't even know who in the devil Monsanto is. I mean, they think it's some Spaniard down in South America.
Well, tell listeners who Monsanto is.
Right. Monsanto is a genetic engineering firm. They actually started out, if I recall correctly, during World War II or with the Vietnam. They manufactured Agent Orange. So they're basically a chemical company. And then they got involved in genetic engineering. And basically, you know, if you're into permaculture and you know about all this sort of thing, you would realize that it's called, they actually call it Frankenfood.
Ah, okay.
So, like, you know, when you're buying, like, Del Monte's string beans or whatever, chances are that's being grown in a monoculture cropping at best. At worst, it's probably also genetically engineered.
Well, and this might be jumping somewhere where I don't know if you know about, but that makes me think about how how our animals are farmed as well. I mean, with all the steroids and all of that sort of stuff. So in order to mass produce all of this, we are poisoning our beef and our chickens and all of our you know, the stuff that's being grown, the vegetables and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I mean, it's a real disaster. And your listeners, if they get a chance, I would really recommend the movie Food Incorporated. You know, I think you can get it on the internet or you can get it through video stores or whatever.
You can probably rent it from Netflix.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, so let me ask you, Beryl. All right, so this food that comes from these, what is it, monoculture forms? Monoculture,
yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Can we protect ourselves from this, you know, genetically engineered food by going, you know, just buying organic? I mean, I know it's more expensive, but does that solve the problem if we just don't go to the grocery store, you know, unless they're selling organics?
That's a tough one, because I would be very careful, because you can go to an organic store, and a lot of the organics are still grown in a monoculture cropping fashion. My rule of thumb, and this is just me, but my rule of thumb is, if you can't kiss your farmer, don't buy it.
Well, do most people have any idea where the food in the grocery store comes from? I mean, how
See,
do we
and
really
that's,
know?
We don't, and that's one of the problems. And, you know, for people that want to research this further, another good book is Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma, because he actually gets into this. He compares and contrasts the four types of farming and food production. But for me personally, I would say, again, I'm saying this kind of tongue-in-cheek, because the fact is, you know, if you're living in the middle of New York City, it's going to be tough to do this. Or maybe it's not. I don't know, because, you know, they do have their stands and stuff. But anyway, they, if to me, it, rule of thumb, again, is, you know, like for Mary and I, for my wife and I, we have a CSA farm, a community supported agriculture farm, and we've actually went and done some help on the farm and this, that, and the other thing. So we know where our food is coming from, in addition to our own garden and that sort of thing. But also, you know, and our meats come from, I mean, you know, we could go out and pet the cows that we're eventually going to eat, kind of thing. I mean, we know how they're being raised. They're raised humanely and that sort of thing. So again, my rule of thumb is, if you can lessen the amount of time you're into the big box grocery stores, the better off you are.
Well, do you think that, you know, like, you know, they sell in the grocery stores here in California anyway. I mean, I didn't see this when I lived in Louisiana. I don't think it even existed. But these vegetable scrubs, it's almost like, you know, you put your vegetables in the sink with a little bit of this scrub. I mean, do you think you can really clean your vegetables that way, or are we kidding ourselves?
If it's been chemically treated, I would think that it's probably gotten deeply embedded into the food.
Yeah.
The chemicals. It's kind of like with us. If we eat something with a chemical on it, or we drink, you know, it's going to get into the cells of our bodies.
Yeah. So it's not just on the exterior; it's already on the interior.
Exactly. It becomes part of every cell in that plant's body.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know a whole lot about all of this, so I'm going to say this to you. What other things are important for us to know about this stuff? Because I might not be asking you the right questions.
Actually, you're doing pretty well with the questions. I mean, my initial reaction to that question is to get as much education as possible. Yeah, I mentioned the movie Food Incorporated. Michael Pollan's Omnivore's Dilemma is a great, great introduction to all this stuff. And what he does is, as I said before, he actually breaks down four different ways of eating. One is the big box grocery store. The second is organic. The third is more the community-supported agriculture model, and then the fourth is hunting and gathering. the best way to go is hunting and gathering, which also makes sense. Because,
I don't think you could plan what we're going to eat next week, though, if you do that.
Well, no.
I'm kidding.
Whatever's there. So,
yeah.
But actually, And Chelice Glendening, in her book, my name is Chelice, and I'm in recovery from Western civilization, gets into this. In terms of health, like teeth, reproductive health, and so on, the hunting and gathering societies are really the healthiest going.
Hmm. Well, Burl, I we have about a half hour left, so we still have a good bit of time, but I want to make sure we get into some of the other sustainable living practices that that you know about and you can tell us about. I assume these sort of help us stay healthier and leave a smaller footprint and be greener. You know, I know these are all the buzzwords today, but what does that really mean? You know, how can, besides, you know, not using plastic bags at the grocery and buying different light bulbs, are there other things that we can practically do that, you know, people living in the city, you know, how can we live more sustainably? Or how are you doing it?
Well, with me, I'm living in Maine, and I have an acre, 1.7 acres. So with me, I have some gardens going, and you know, that's what I do. But I also use like I was saying before, I also use a CSA because Oh, I'm sorry, community supported agriculture.
Okay.
But I also use them because, again, I know where the food's coming from, and being that I'm only in my fourth year, I'm still making a lot of mistakes. You know, so I have that double supply there. But also for me, I also go to a farm for meat where I know how the cows are raised. They're grass fed. They're free range and that sort of thing. So that's what I do. Now, if you're in the city, I'm thinking of New York. There are some like city gardens and that sort of thing that have taken root. Exactly where they are, I'm not for sure. I'm trying to remember. Again, this was another movie, and I'm trying to remember the name of it.
Not Soylent Green. That was a joke.
No Impact Man. No Impact.
Okay.
So that might be a movie for your city dwellers to look at. Because, you know, yes, it is harder in the city, but it's still doable. And I know with New York, and this was in the No Impact Man, they do still have, like, a lot of the vegetable stands and that sort of thing, so they were able to see exactly where their food was coming from or, you know.
So really, it really all boils down to awareness. That's really it. We really have to take the time to educate ourselves and not just, I always use the word sheeple. You know, not be like sheeple in a horde or in a herd. Go into the regular sort of grocery store. We have to be more discerning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. We have to be more discerning. More aware, and also, you know, a lot of this stuff, because I've noticed, because when I first started the permaculture farming or gardening rather, I was over 300 pounds and have since lost about 80 to 90 pounds.
Wow.
But it's not by changing the amount that I eat, it's by I haven't increased exercise. Now, the exercise that I have increased has been in terms of the actual gardening.
So you have your hand in the earth, but now you're eating vegetables instead of some sort of processed food.
Right. I'm eating vegetables, and it's not, you know, the food that I'm eating doesn't have, you know, chemicals that I can't read that I need a chemistry degree to really figure out.
You mean like that are in canned foods or something?
Yeah, exactly. Because I remember reading somewhere where, you know, some of those additives and stuff are meant to actually stimulate your hunger more.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, so that you wind up eating more.
Well, Burl, what are transition towns? Or you said the transition town movement.
Yeah, transition tail movement, and again, I'm pretty new with that, but basically they are movements, and I really should have my supervisor in on this one because she's deeply involved in it. But they're basically ways in which people can band together within a neighborhood. Like, for example, my wife and I go to the Brunswick, Maine area Transition Town Movement, and they provide a lot of education about, you know, growing your own food and that sort of thing. But also in terms of networking, for example, we have a buying club through our Transition Town.
So it's like your co-op or something.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way to put it. Exactly.
But the transition word is throwing me. What are you transitioning from? From what to what?
Well, we're really transitioning from reliance on large corporations into self-reliance, community reliance.
Okay. It's sort of, you know, almost like in ancient times when, you know, everybody in the tribe or the town, that was your world, you know. So
exactly.
So those were the people you dealt with for everything you needed, rather than going to Walmart or getting something from another country or something like that.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the ways, you know, in terms of becoming more green and in terms of saving the planet and that sort of thing, is that we are going to have to rebond with each other, which is a good thing. I mean, you know, right now we sit in front of television sets all day long, and, you know, we don't even know what each other looks like. I mean, you know, we don't know who our neighbors are.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's not an exaggeration. I live in a big apartment building, and I know for a fact some of the people don't even know who's on the other side of the wall from them.
Yeah, exactly. And that to me is not healthy. You know, because, I mean, if you're in a real community, you know, when things get tight, you're more likely to survive. I mean, when things get tough, I should say, you're going to be more likely to survive. Because I remember even in Baltimore, I mean, if we had a big snowstorm, you know, we were all out shoveling together and that sort of thing. We were really helping each other out. But that was back in the 70s. Whereas, you know, I don't think, like in some of the larger, well, even when I lived in Northern Virginia, that wouldn't have happened. I mean, you were on your own.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it makes life a lot more dangerous that way. But also, you don't have that human interaction, that human bonding that I think is sorely missing in this country. You know, I really think we need to get not only organic with our foods, but with each other. I mean, you know, we really do need to become community again. And to me, that's ultimately what the Transition Town Movement is about.
I see. Well, and you know, when I'm thinking, Burl, even on a much smaller basis, I mean, you see families today. I mean, you know, the kids are texting or they're on the internet, and you know, they maybe the family doesn't even eat dinner together, you know, because you know, dad works late or the kids have soccer practice. I mean, we've really sort of lost our close-knittedness, I think, some, you know, even in our families. So, you know, so then, of course, you know, it doesn't, you know, translate outside our front door if we're not even doing it in our house.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, I'm really picking on Northern Virginia, but I remember going through some of those neighborhoods there and would go through some of the middle-class neighborhoods, and I knew there were kids in those neighborhoods, but you never saw them. I mean, they were all holed up in their bedrooms in front of computers or TVs or whatever, and that was that. It's like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it's sad. So, well,
yeah,
and
yeah.
I would imagine as a counselor, I mean, maybe that this is a good segue. You know, you've been a counselor for 15 years, and, you know, when you work with adults with mental health issues and, you know, at-risk kids and stuff, how does your book, Sophia's Web, how does that relate to that work you do in the world?
Oh, big time. And when I say big time, I don't mean necessarily that I go in and talk to my clients about Sophia or anything, because I keep my beliefs, you know, out of it. But what's important to me is that the people that I'm working with are empowered. And, you know, with the families, a lot of times it's really the parents that I'm going after on that, trying to empower the parents so that they can in turn parent their kids, so the kids will wind up being empowered. But again, I think one of the big issues in our culture, and this is what relates to Sophia's Web, is that we're very externalized in terms of power. So, you know, we have a very top-down system where this controls that and so on and so forth. Whereas I feel like my job as a counselor is to help people, you know, the parents and then in turn their kids, to develop more of their internal powers.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I do. And maybe this is going to sound paranoid, and maybe this isn't even where you're going, but it makes me think, you know, just like education isn't funded very much, religion wants to control us and tell us what to do. I mean, there's nobody out there that really wants us to be, I think, really self-sufficient and independent, because it's really about power and control. And I don't know, maybe that's not it, but
no, that's exactly right. And you know, I mean, you couldn't hit the nail more on the head in terms of my overall philosophy behind Sophia's Web, behind the work that I do, and so on. And you know, and even when there's been times when I've been talking about developing an eco village and that sort of thing, is my biggest dream is to see people empowered from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, it does tie into, you know, a lot of the feminine stuff, because the feminine to me is very internal.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the suppression of the feminine is also the suppression of the inner world, the psyche.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, you know, again, my work as a counselor and that sort of thing is to help bring that force so it unfolds from within a person, unfold the power from within. And I think it's the same thing, you know, when I get into Sophia and that, because Sophia to me is the inner reality of all things, whether it be person, plan, or whatever. So again, it's to bring that power forth from within.
Well, yeah, you're definitely right. I mean, I'm thinking back to the last class I taught before we took a break with Cakes for the Queen of Heaven, and the class is primarily geared toward women because, you know, they're the ones who have really got the short end of the stick in the patriarchy, but it talks about women's power, and it talks about the structures in place or power over structures, and
mm-hmm.
power over structures, like the church and the government and all of this, it's really designed to sort of keep you in line, but it's also designed, you know, you don't, you know, it makes it hard for you to reach your fullest potential, you know, in these sorts of environments. And it's also sort of it's also based on fear, because the idea is if everyone were truly empowered, you know, you would have less need for power over. And I'm not articulating it very well. If I'd have known our conversation was going to go in this direction, I'd have gotten that little paragraph out. Because it's a little hard to articulate, but it's really about when people are having power over you, it's because they fear you attaining your own power.
Yeah, exactly. And they need to have that control over things. But can you also see how that also relates to monoculture cropping and that sort of, because it's the same type of thing, is you want to take total control over everything instead of letting it unfold from the inside out.
Okay? Right.
Whether it be in nature or whether it be in human beings. I mean, it's really a very, you know, it's kind of like, again, I'm getting to David Bohm's the physicist, the holographic theory, which is that everything mirrors everything else. And basically the problem, and you're putting your thumb right on it. You know, the problems that we're having with ourselves as individuals being disempowered is also mirroring how we're disempowering nature to do her job.
Right. Well, but no, I do have a question about, you know, Monsanto and the pesticides and the monoculture farming. Is there scientific reason to actually be doing this? Is it all about greed, or is it about sincerely needing these practices to create enough food so that the world is fed?
That's okay. I'm not for sure. I have my own theory, and my theory is that it's basically greed, and it's wanting to have power over. And I think it's an ego trip is what it boils down to. You have power over everything.
The Bible told man from the beginning, you know, gave him license to have power over everything. So it's,
right.
There's my anti-Bible jab for the show. former recovering Catholic here. Well, Beryl, let's, so Sophia's Web, I know there's, you know, obviously, you know, we know there's a growing movement toward goddess spirituality. So would you say Sophia's Web is sort of ecology as well as, maybe a psychological look at restoring wholeness?
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of everything. That's one of the things about my mindset is that I don't really divide things up very much, but instead I see the interrelations between everything,
mm-hmm.
and which is why it's called Sophia's Web, Wisdom's Web. Now I'm starting to get an image of in the heaven of Indra in Hindu, where every point in the web mirrors all other points. And, you know, when I was talking about the relationship between, you know, Monsanto and how we and how they treat crops and how we disempower people, you know, it's all part of that mirroring web.
So it's, okay, I'm seeing a bigger picture now. So you're talking, when you say this mirroring web, you're saying, you know, that's how we exploit people, whether it's Wall Street versus Main Street, whether it's the church, misogynists against women, or pedophile priests, or it's all, you know, somebody having power over somebody else, disempowering your fellow human being or species or crop or whatever it is. So it's like we perpetuate this the way we're doing things now.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I mean, you couldn't put it more beautifully.
Okay. All right. Well, you said that there was, I think you told me that there was a passage from Sophia's Web, you wanted to share with us.
Sure. Let me see if I can find it. There we go. This actually comes at the end of the book, so I'm going to give you my closing. In closing, I pray Sophia will shine her light of truth into the depths of your soul. I also hope she does so in the eternal present. After all, there is no other time than now. The only reality that is exists as the timeless and eternal moment who is forever pregnant with change. Now here, with all its incumbent needs and challenges, is crucial to eternity infinity. Give your whole heart, life, and labor to this moment in this place. You are an inherent, crucial microcosm of the all. The magnificent biblical claim, God is love, necessitates your being here now for him, her, to love and to love him, her, and his, her creation reciprocally. Love is transitive in nature. Love is a verb as well as a noun. Therefore, we must understand God as verb as well as noun. You must receive and give love or all dissolves back into nothingness. God trusted you that much with his, her own essence. His Holy Spirit, his Sophia, dwells in you. Do not let God down. That which you believe, accomplish, and are in this place and moment matters. like Bastion in the never-ending story, you hold the whole ball of wax in your hands. Without your compassionate participation, there is nothing.
Well, Bill, I think you're sort of most definitely, you know, hitting the nail on the head here. Have you run into any sort of barriers or opposition in these ideas of yours?
Not so much. I mean, I have a guy on Facebook that's not real happy with me, but
well, we all have those.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of like, even though I've been working on this since 92, I now have my first heckler, so, you know, I guess that's...
Well, you know, I think when we get hecklers, we must be, you know, we must be hitting a nerve somewhere. You know, I think we're maybe getting to the truth.
Yeah, exactly. I think you're right. I've lost sight of your question, I think.
Well, I guess I just wanted to say that, you know, I appreciated us having the ability, you know, the chance to talk about this, because you've actually sort of made me think about all of this and shifted my consciousness in another way too. Because, you know, quite honestly, this might sound ridiculous, but I never really equated power over in agriculture the same way that, you know, I see exploitation or misuse in other, you know, parts of society or culture or, you know, religion, government, whatever. But now I can add that as well, because I see what you're saying. You know, it's just perpetuated, you know, within this arena as well.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And we can also be the catalyst to change that. I mean, you know, as much as, you know, those points in the web are mirroring, you know, all these disempowering things, we can also change it to where they're mirroring power.
Right.
So that's our task.
Well, you know, I think about, these silly beauty contests that I don't think do much at all for women.
Right.
They always ask them that question, you know, and somebody always wants world peace. I don't know that I've ever had anybody say they wish they could wake, you know, the world would wake up one day with wisdom. But imagine, you know, I always say if I was selfish, I would, you know, and I had that question and somebody could really grant me that wish, I'd want a time machine. But the truly selfless thing would be for the world to wake up in wisdom, because, you know, then maybe we would start putting things on the right track.
Exactly. I couldn't have stated it better.
Well, Beryl, tell us, is it possible yet to get Sophia's Web? I know we might have been a little bit premature. If someone wanted more information about the book, what's your best recommendation, that they just go to sophiasweb.ning.com?
Right. Either. Well, I tell you what, why don't they take down my email address?
Okay,
I mean, they can also go to Sophia's name. It's all small letters, Burl, B-U-R-L, underline, Hall, H-A-L-L, at yahoo.com.
Okay.
Go
ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay. Yeah. What I'm doing is I'm publishing it through Lulu. I didn't have enough money to do it through Amazon, so I'm doing it through Lulu. And, you know, right now I have the manuscript in, and I'm struggling because I'm not a computer whiz. So I'm struggling right now with getting the cover done.
Well, and I'm sure you probably wouldn't turn down any donations. If any of our listeners what you have to say, they could send you donations, couldn't they?
Yes, they could.
Okay,
and
you
again,
won't turn them
down. They write to the email address, and, you know, I'll give them my address and all that good stuff. So.
Okay. Well, Beryl, this is up to you. I invite you to stay on with me for the rest of the show if you like, but I know it's late where you are, so if you need to go, that's totally up to you. But I just wanted to put that out to you. Okay.
Okay. I think I will go.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for these insights. They've definitely been very valuable, and you were a great guest for Earth Day. I'm sure our listeners learned a lot.
I hope so, and I hope that it also sparks some action on their part.
Well, I think we're all being called to really look at how we do things, how we think, what we say. We really do have to just shift in all sorts of different directions. This was more food for thought for us. I guess pun intended.
Yeah, it is. It is. But you're right. I mean, food is what energizes us. So it's food for thought.
Okay. Well, Bill, thank you so much, and I wish you the best of luck with Sophia's Web, and no doubt we will stay connected in the other ways that we're connected.
Right. Okay, great. Thanks, Karen.
Bill.
And it's great actually hearing your voice. So.
Yeah, same here. Tell your wife hello, and I'm sure we'll be in touch again.
Sounds good.
All right. Good night.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
So if you're just tuning in, this is Karen Tate, hostess of Voices of the Sacred Feminine, where we discuss Goddess, the Divine Feminine, and the resurging interest in right brain thinking and the feminine consciousness, whether the great She be deity, archetype, or ideal, and how these new values, just like we were talking about with Burl, and benchmarks just will save our world. You've been listening to Wayshower Burl Hall, author of Sophia's Web, offering us some great ideas and visionary thinking for a sustainable future. Well, listeners, we're crossing the threshold into the bottom of the hour, and I'm going to take a very brief one-minute music break. That's a literal minute to get ready for the What's the Buzz segment. And for that minute, I think I'm going to leave you listening to, how about something upbeat and fun? Be Optimistic is the group. The song is Maria. It's dedicated to the sacred feminine and the aspect of Maria. They're a UK group, and here's Maria. Well, listeners, I'm back with you. Thanks for staying tuned in. And did you hear that? You know what that sound means. That's those bees a-buzzing. So it means it's time for the What's the Buzz segment, when I tell you about those bees buzzing around in my bonnet all week. Well, I want to start with this little food for thought question. Considering tomorrow is Earth Day, one of my favorite blogs, Alternet, the writer Stephanie Rogers from Eco Salon, she poses the question for city dwellers, would you give up an urban life and live in the country? Well, she says the sticks, but that sounded kind of derogatory, so I'm going to say live in the country. So I'm going to share a little bit about what she says. Can you imagine swapping your cute shoe collection for a few pair of work boots, giving up weekly nights out with the girls or guys to shovel manure and mend fences, or foregoing frequent trips to your favorite takeout restaurant in favor of making all your own meals? It's called trading sex in the city for a little house on the prairie. Well, the Wall Street Journal recently reported there's an increasing rank of city and town dwellers that are moving their families to the countryside. Surprisingly, young urban refugees are aiming for rural self-sufficiency. They see General Motors go down and AIG go down, and they're asking, gee, can my company go down? There's lots of angst and anxiety. So considering that land in some areas of the country costs as little as $1,000 an acre, and off-grid green homes can be built for a pittance, it's possible to be debt-free and have extremely low living expenses when you own your own land. And you don't necessarily have to become a farmer depending on your crops for income, because access to high-speed internet makes it possible for people to keep their jobs and telecommute while hobby farming or raising just enough food for themselves. So I guess even if you're an unmarried lady who's never planted a seed in her life, or a guy, many ruralpolitans, that's what they're calling themselves, ruralpolitans are single, and femivorism is an intriguing new trend as well. So you could actually become a ruralpolitan. Just some food for thought. Maybe it's not as hard or out of the question as we might have thought. Okay, and you know, we were talking about Monsanto and these big corporations and pesticides and poisons that are poisoning us and the environment. It seems Dow Chemical is trying to put a glamour over our eyes to hide past bad deeds with this live Earth run that they're sponsoring. But like those little company commercials trying to tell us they're friends of the environment, don't be fooled. Apparently Dow Chemical is trying to sponsor a live Earth run for water next week, which the company says it's part of its efforts to help 1.2 billion people across the globe that lack access to clean water. But according to Rachel Chernansky with Planet Green, Dow has contaminated water supplies for many of those 1.2 billion people. It's affiliated with dioxin pollution in Michigan water that the EPA is now paying to clean up. It's associated with dolphin deaths in Texas and horrific human injuries from South Africa to New Zealand. The company's reputation has also still not recovered from the Bhopal, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Bhopal disaster, which was the 1984 gas leak from a pesticide plant in Bhopal, India, that killed up to 16,000 people from gas-related diseases and injured countless others. More than 25 years later, 390 tons of toxic chemicals continue to leak out from the abandoned site and pollute the region's groundwater, and Dow has not taken responsibility for the cleanup. So, the International Campaign for Justice in Bhopal points out that if people have the time and dedication to run 6 miles in this live Earth run for water that Dow was trying to sponsor, then the point of what they're running for probably matters to them. So they've created a petition to the organizers of Live Earth protesting Dow's involvement in a day of action for clean water in light of these unresolved issues. So you might ask, how can you help? Really helping the global problem of access to clean water requires global solutions. Many water supplies are contaminated because of industrial plants. So as with all other environmental issues, a crucial part of any holistic solution should be to cut down on our consumption. Also, there are organizations dedicated exclusively to providing clean water to communities around the world. You can Google these groups. There's one called Water for People, and there's another called Charity:Water, and they both could use some support. So rather than go run in a race like this, Google Water for People or Charity Water and see how you really can make a difference instead of supporting this chemical company who's caused so much devastation. Let's see. The next thing I wanted to share with you, this next article really upset me because I used to take my kitty, my beloved kitty, my precious kitty, to the vet for flea baths. They make it sound like a day at the pet spa. Well, I am better aware these days. Marla Cohn with Environmental Health News. She's also on AlterNet. She tells us, she warns us that the powerful poisons in these flea treatments can endanger dogs and cats, and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency is going to start to require new instructions and labeling for these on-spot flea products. The products, including the popular Frontline and Advantage brands, there are small vials of liquid pesticide that pet owners apply monthly to the backs of dogs and cats to kill fleas and ticks. Now, I don't know about you, but when I watched these commercials, I had no idea that we were literally putting pesticides into our pets' bodies. The EPA began investigating the product after discovering a sharp rise in the number of pets reported to be sick after they were treated. The year-long investigation conducted by a team of vets assembled by the federal agency, the EPA, concluded that certain pets, especially small ones, dogs that are only 10 or 20 pounds, are most susceptible to the problem, and some of the side effects were rashes, vomiting, diarrhea, and seizures, even death. EPA Assistant Administrator Steve Owens said that no products are being banned at this point, but they're going to be watching the situation. New instruction and warnings are expected on product labels within the next several months. And if these steps don't reduce the problems, they're going to remove products from the market if they have to. Pet owners who use the treatments think they're applying medication to their pet, but they're actually treating their pets with potent pesticides, which are used to kill pests on crops and yards. These are poisons we're applying to our pets, and pet owners need to be aware and exercise caution. Incidents reported by consumers have doubled. In 2007, incidents were like 28,000. In 2008, there were 44,000. That's a 53% increase in 1 year. While most of the problems were minor, about 600 dogs and cats actually died from these problems. So we really need to be aware. In some cases, pet owners were misusing the product, but the EPA officials stress that most of the blame goes to the industry, not consumers, because of poor labeling. So be sure you know if you're putting poison pesticides on your beloved pet. Don't be like me. I thought I was doing a good thing for my kitty, my beloved kitty, and now I know I was taking her to the vet to be poisoned. It just sort of kills me. It breaks my heart. Okay, next item. Some tips here, a few tips from the Wilderness Society for Earth Day. And let's see, number one is leave no trace when visiting your favorite place, whether you're hiking or whether you're camping. Also, that means leave no canine traces either, if you know what I mean. Bring along that plastic bag, that pooper scooper. Connect kids with nature. You know, get them into nature. Like Burl was saying, get them out from behind the computer and get them out in nature to enjoy and connect and see the beauty of Mother Earth and all they have to get from that. Also, volunteer on the land. That's something you can do. And let's see, and for more details on these tips, you can go to wilderness.org. They'll tell you how you can actually speak up for our nation's forests and more about how to weigh in on conservation decisions that are being made by our government. And another interesting thing they talk about is become a citizen scientist, which I thought was kind of cool. They say that you can actually volunteer to track the movement of animals. Like there's the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. You would, track the movement of the herd. And there's other different things, too. Cornell University has a citizen science website you can go to. So anyway, go to wilderness.org if you're thinking you want to get more involved. Maybe teach your children, more about walking on the earth lightly, being a steward, a caretaker of the earth, rather than someone who exploits it and takes it for granted and abuses it. All right, the next thing I wanted you to know about is the Witch Museum that's opening in Salem, Massachusetts. Now, it's going to deal with real-world witches, and it's operated by practicing witches. This museum will be a place of learning for and about the global witch movement, and will tell their story. With witchcraft, witches, and Wiccan culture on the rise worldwide, the World of Witches Museum tells the story of their struggles, history, and beliefs from a witch's point of view, instead of that propaganda we get from the pulpit. And the museum, under its curator, Reverend Donald Lewis, will tell the story of witches from the past, present, and those witches who are walking among us today. Reverend Don says one of the questions that comes up repeatedly is, will the World of Witches in Salem cover the Salem witch trials? No, no, no. He says this is one area the museum will defer to others in Witch City, which he's, you know, the moniker for Salem. He says the Salem witch trials are covered wonderfully by museums such as the Salem Witchcraft Museum. So if you want more information about the World of Witches Museum, it's being housed and retrofitted from Dracula's Castle, which was a former haunted house attraction on Pickering Wharf in Salem, Massachusetts. It's located at 57 Wharf Street, Pickering Wharf, Salem, Mass., and the phone number, in case you're interested and want to know more, 978-745-5888. That's 978-745-5888. Now, well, we all got the Christian. We all got the Christian fundamentalists. You know, like Jerry Falwell. We hear him blaming natural calamities on gays and sin. Well, now Iran has their Jerry Falwell. A senior Iranian cleric says women who wear immodest clothing and behave promiscuously are to blame for earthquakes. Someone was asked, what can we do to avoid being buried under the rubble? Well, the answer was, there's no other solution but to take refuge in religion and to adapt our lives to Islam's moral code. Well, I just wonder how many women will end up beaten or dead as a result of this brilliant idea that promiscuous women cause earthquakes. That actually is was reported in the Huffington Post, and that's a story out of Beirut. It is not a joke. Let's see. Next up, I want you to know about is a 10-year-old's pregnancy fuels Mexican abortion debate. A pregnant 10-year-old allegedly raped by her stepfather has become the latest lightning rod in the country's heated abortion debate. The girl's stepfather has been arrested, but advocates on both sides of the issue say their battle is just beginning. Adriana Ortiz Ortega, a researcher at Mexico's National Autonomous University, who's written two books on abortion in Mexico, says, this girl is much more than an isolated case, and there is much more influence now from conservative groups that are trying to prevent the legalization of abortion. What the article says here is abortion is legal in Mexico's capital city, but prohibited or significantly restricted in most of the country's states. The girl was from Quintana Roo on the Yucatan Peninsula. And where she lives, they allow abortion in cases of rape during the first 90 days of pregnancy, but the 10-year-old girl is nearly a month past that limit. Advocacy groups are calling for federal officials and the United Nations to investigate how Quintana Roo handled the matter, claiming that officials did not inform her of her abortion rights. Maria Haddad, a state legislature, said that the girl's doctors aren't telling the whole story. She said that continuing the pregnancy could cause severe mental and physical health problems for the girl, not to mention what a high-risk pregnancy this would be for this 10-year-old child. What a shame. You know, there shouldn't even be a question. But we live in a crazy world. Still on the subject of abortion and choice, according to the Ms. Magazine blog, they're back at it again like a bad dream. After a solid rejection by 73% of Colorado voters in 2008, an anti-choice group called Personhood USA has returned with another slightly different proposed constitutional amendment to confer legal personhood on zygotes. If passed, Amendment 62 would apply the term person to, quote, every human being from the beginning of the biological development of that human being, unquote. So anyhow, Planned Parenthood of the Rocky Mountains says that these deceptive, dangerous, and misleading ideas, you know, that they're proposing, they call it an extreme measure that's more than a sneaky attempt to ban abortion. The ACLU and other pro-choice groups contend that the amendment would not only prohibit abortions, but could be used to block stem cell research and could curtail access to in vitro fertilization and even common forms of contraception. It's a nightmare scenario, but pro-choice organizers are counting on Colorado voters to lead the way and once again defeat this extreme measure. And pro-choice activists in Colorado are prepared to fight this measure again and lead the opposition's campaign with nearly 100 Protect Family, Protect Choices coalition partners, a diverse group of organizations and individuals, including doctors, nurses, and legal experts. No, we don't want this to pass. So if you know anybody in Colorado, tell them to sign petitions, tell them to get involved. This personhood initiative is just a sneaky way to try to take women's reproductive rights away. And speaking of women's rights, did you know that President Obama said today that he'd see to it that he appointed a person to the Supreme Court who would protect women's rights? Now, I don't know about you, but that was a breath of fresh air. Finally, an administration who gets it, who cares about women's rights. Also in the news today, along the lines of women's rights, Vice President Joe Biden announced that the Obama administration would issue a letter withdrawing the Bush administration's controversial 2005 interpretation of something called Title IX. Well, Title IX was really just a way to, you know, not allow there to be funding, equal funding for women's sports as well as male sports. But Biden said what we're doing here today will ensure equal opportunity in athletics and allow women to realize their potential so this nation can realize its potential. So good for them. What a change of pace, a breath of fresh air. And I guess I'll say let's breathe. Let's breathe while we can, this breath of fresh air. Well, that concludes our What's the Buzz segment for tonight. And as long as you keep telling me you think this is important, I'll keep shedding light on ideals of the sacred feminine, which are being honored out in the world, or ideals that are being oppressed. We have to be aware. We have to keep pushing back. Greed and the desire for power over others is pervasive. People who measure themselves and their value by the size of their bank book aren't going to roll over and give up their influence and control. So we have to counter their toxic strategies and the imbalance and disharmony they create. Because remember, I hope you're not tired of hearing me say it. I think it deserves a bumper sticker, actually. According to the Dalai Lama, it will be Western women who will save the world. That means you and me and our like-minded brothers, and we will. We'll do it with our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. As we will it, so shall it be. So with that being said, the bees are released from my bonnet for yet another week. So let's move into our announcements. After the show next Wednesday, a friend of mine would like to invite you to drop by the Artists United for Social Justice. It's a free event at a place called Bistango. It's to benefit Haiti. The friend who sent me this is Sandy Kirkpatrick. She is very into trying to fight against human trafficking, and she's just back from Haiti. She's going to be on the show soon and tell us what's going on there, which she's seen firsthand. Artists United for Social Justice, they're working to stop human trafficking, and they do humanitarian relief, bringing in medical supplies directly to Haitian clinics. And Bistango's is at 19100 Von Carmen in Irvine. and AUSJ will be there till 10 o'clock. That's next Wednesday. And Bastangos will donate 15% of the evening's proceeds to the mission statement of Artists United for Justice. And like I said, their focus is on Haiti right now to help stop the enslavement of women and children and bring relief. So if you, if you have nothing to do next Wednesday after the show, think about going to Bastangos and have a good time. And in the process, you'll be helping women and children in Haiti. Let's see, I also wanted to tell you that I'm planning a sacred tour for women and men to goddess sites of Turkey for October 2011. So please stay tuned or keep up with developments on my website. This journey to Turkey is my third, and it's intended to be a very experiential journey, complete with hamams, which are another word for Turkish baths, that will help us get into our bodies and experience the magic that Turkey has to offer on so many levels. We'll do dream journals and meditations and rituals at sacred sites. We'll visit archaeological museums in places like Chateau Hayuk, where we believe egalitarian societies, people who honor gender partnership, lived and worshiped goddess. And I'm only planning to take about 20 people, so be thinking if you want to be one of our pilgrimage group. And speaking of Turkey, if you're in the Los Angeles or Orange County area, don't miss the Anatolian Cultures and Food Festival in Orange County. That's going to be happening one weekend only, May 6th through 9th. It'll be a great warm-up to taking the tour. My husband Roy and I attended this last year, and it was really great, especially for someone who hasn't had a chance to experience the history, food, and culture of Turkey yet. It is highly recommended. If you want more information about that, you can email me, or I'm sure you can go on let me give you a website. It's info@AnatolianFestival.org. That's A-N-A-T-O-L-I-A-N, info@AnatolianFestival.org. I remember last year it was a feast for the senses, lots of great food. The entrance showed different, was decorated. It is like you were walking through time, starting with Paleolithic times through to contemporary times. There was great jewelry. There were performances, lots of, arts and crafts people there, too. And speaking of pilgrimage, I've been invited to give a workshop at her church, the Feminist Lutheran Church in San Francisco, on May 16th. So if you're in the Bay Area, please come. The workshop is about the art of sacred pilgrimage and the mystical and esoterica of sacred sites of goddess. It's going to be a workshop for both your left and right brain, I promise. And remember my motto, have Sistrum will travel. I'm available to talk to your group or church. You just have to sponsor me to come to your city, so keep me in mind. And you hear me say that now and then, have Sistrum will travel. In case you don't know what a sistrum is, it's actually a musical and magical instrument from ancient times. It was sacred to several goddesses, Hathor and Isis, and Bast being a few of them. I think it was Herodotus that said, when you shook the sistrum, that tinkling sound was so powerful, these magical sistrums, that you would actually keep the energies of the universe flowing. Wonderful, these sistrums. You see them on in museums and on reliefs, and the Egyptian goddesses, Isis and Hathor and Bast, are often holding these rattles, sistrums, musical instruments that ward away negative forces and evil. Let's see. Next thing I want to announce is Cakes for the Queen of Heaven for women only at the Goddess Temple in Orange County is going to be starting back the first class of Session 2 on May 8th. These next six classes, which can be taken individually, it's not necessary to take them all, will be covering, female imagery and the female presence, which was ignored in Judaism and Christianity. We're going to be looking at the painful suppression of female experience in Western religious traditions, and we'll relate our personal discoveries and experiences to our individual identities, and we'll explore new world views and theologies for the future. The May 8th class is going to talk about the Hebrew goddess, The May 22nd class will be about Sarah the Priestess. June 12th is Mary Magdalene. June 26th is the Virgin Mary. July 10th is Witchcraft. July 24th is Intentions. And at the end of the last class, we're going to have our temple graduation party to celebrate the sacred knowledge that we all attained. Up next in announcements, Barbara Walker asked me to mention that her new book, Man Made God, M-A-N-M-A-D-E, God, a collection of essays, is now out. Stellar House Publishing has published it, and I'm sure you can get it at Amazon or any other bookseller. Man Made God is a series of articles by the author of the Women's Encyclopedia of Myths and Secrets. Extraordinary independent scholar of comparative religion and mythology, Barbara Walker takes us through a journey back in time to when the goddess and her consort slash son ruled supreme, into the era when the patriarchy usurped her worship, right up to Barbara's own personal experience being raised a Christian. While many of you probably recognize the name Barbara Walker, she is a foremother of goddess spirituality. She is much beloved and has been inspirational to many of us in goddess spirituality, and it was my great honor to have her on the show recently, so you can go back into the archives and look for her. I believe she was a guest back in December, but she would be easy enough to find. Then, this is another event happening here in Southern California called Dancing the Goddess Within. It's weekly classes starting in the San Fernando Valley, and I know the teacher, Shakti. She's very good. And the description of the class is moving into feminine knowledge through sacred meditative movement. You will transform into your goddess self. Content includes tantric yogic breathing, belly dance instruction, goddess wisdom teachings, focused intention, guided journeys, meditative, creative dances, and sharing of feelings and insights. $25 a class. And if you would like to contact Shakti, classes are on Mondays starting May 3rd. Her phone number is 818-509-9837, or go to her email address, ShaktiStar, S-H-A-K-T-I-S-T-A-R, at AOL.com. Shakti has a doctorate in clinical hypnotherapy, and she's the author of Dancing the Divine, Exploring Tantric Transformational Dance. She's been developing goddess dance for over 10 years, teaching workshops and counseling. So you might think that's fun. I've taken her classes, and they are, and you get a lot out of them, too. And there's still time for the Craft and Folk Art Museum is having their exhibit called The Fool's Journey, The History and Symbolism of the Tarot. It's running until May 9th, so that's on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. So if the Tarot is your thing and you're in Southern California or Los Angeles, you can go to www.cafam.org/current.html, and that is the Craft and Folk Art Museum. Okay, and that's The Fool's Journey, The History and Symbolism of the Tarot, running through May 9th at the Craft and Folk Art Museum on Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles. And I also want you to know that the Getty Museum, lots of stuff going on down here in Southern California. It would be hard to live in the country and give up access to all of this. The Getty Museum is having an event from March 24th to July 5th called the Aztec Pantheon and the Art of Empire. And from the description, they are having works in this exhibit on display from the National Museum of Anthropology and excavations from Templo Mayor in Mexico City. Both certainly should include goddess artifacts, so I definitely plan to go and check it out because I've been to that museum in Mexico City. It is astounding, and I know goddess artifacts were found in the Templo Mayor in Mexico City, so I actually can't wait to go see what they have on exhibit. Let's see. Let me get into the lineup of guests for April. On Monday, as I mentioned earlier, for a specially scheduled show, we have Foremother Eleanor Gadden, author of The Once and Future Goddess, as our guest. And she is going to be discussing goddess spirituality and what that has meant to her life. I'm sure many of you know Eleanor, probably have her book on your shelf, so you won't want to miss it. I think she's going to be a great guest. Then Wednesday, April 28th, at our regular time, we have the beloved Max Dashew celebrating the 40th anniversary of the Suppressed Histories Archive. And then the first Wednesday in May, we have a real change of pace. Esther Luttrell, who's written the book Dear Dean, Love Mom, she's going to be on the show discussing how she's come to be sure there is something beyond our physical death as she tells her story of her experiences with her son Don after he passed away. I read her book and I invited her on the show because I was so intrigued with her story that I literally almost missed my own radio show. I could not put the book down, and I think you will enjoy hearing what she has to say. I think she's divinely inspired, and that's why I invited her on the show. Let's see, I got something in here from Vicki Noble, who I'm sure it's a name many of you will recognize. She wants to call your attention to an important and interesting event taking place in Bolivia this week. And because tomorrow is Earth Day, I want to make sure I mention it today. There's going to be an international climate summit called the People Summit. It's being called by the indigenous president of Bolivia, Evo Morales. The stated purpose of the summit is to actually deal with the problems and issues of climate change, making up for what the government powers of the world did not do at the recent failed talks in Copenhagen. This summit deals with what Starhawk calls global systems collapse, and the indigenous activists, including their president, speak of the threats to Mother Earth, known as Pachamama, in their Andean language. You can hear and see some of the speakers and activists, many of them women, and young, intelligent, articulate women, such as Angelica Navarro, the lead climate negotiator in Bolivia, at the summit on Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! That's another one of my favorite shows, Amy Goodman's Democracy Now! And that website is www.democracynow.org. Please listen to the show from this morning and get a sense of these indigenous people whose voices are so often ignored and whose wisdom is so utterly profound. As Vicki says, it's Avatar happening right here, right now in Bolivia. Okay. And if you want to get to know me a little bit better, I am literally an open book. Please go to my website, www.karentate.com. Go there to learn about my books, my examiner column, the classes I teach. It will also take you to some YouTube clips I have of the Isis Temple of Thanksgiving and Sekhmet's Mountain Sanctuary. There's also a six-part clip you can listen to about the sacred feminine for a sustainable future. And did you know I have 2 years of archived radio shows on my website from when I was on Passionate Internet Voices Radio? Yep, they're right there and downloadable and free. I thank those of you who call it a treasure because that's like gas in my tank. So please keep your feedback coming in. Go there when you can. Take advantage of it, please. I have to say I have been blessed with some of the most profound and insightful scholars and practitioners and visionaries and activists. They're incredible, and everyone who listens really gets so much out of it. So if you don't know about it, please go to my website, go click on the button that says radio shows, and there are links there that will take you to the old shows that go back to 2007. And, of course, you can always go to the archives on Blog Talk Radio. I'm here a year now, believe it or not, almost a year now. So there's archives on my website from my old show, and there's lots of archives here on Blog Talk Radio as well. Let's see, what else do I want to tell you? Well, my last Examiner column really kicked up quite a stir. I had Dr. David Hillman as my guest contributor. Some of you know him because he's been on the show, and your feedback has been awesome, primarily mostly positive, I might add, as people realize what an advocate of women and goddess David really is. He wrote the articles on my Examiner column, Thank Christianity for Feminism, which really got some dialogue going, as well as the more recent one, You've Got the Clash and Can't Get Rid of It, which was a movie review of sorts of the Clash of the Titans movie out now. But it really was a vehicle to discuss how we're losing truth and knowledge and an understanding of history in our society today with each passing generation. So I hope you'll go there and comment on David's passionate rant. Thank you for reading and commenting and for understanding. I really want to provide a platform for the exchange of ideas and theories on my radio show and my Examiner column. We have to be aware. We have to be able to talk about different ideas and exchange knowledge and share theories. And we don't all have to agree on everything. In fact, I like it better when we have different ideas that we can discuss, varying counterpoints. And I don't require guests on this show think exactly like me or my peers, but I firmly believe we all do have a place under that great big umbrella of the great she. I hope you'll check out my favorite articles on the Examiner column while you're there. It's kind of like my blog. I'm one of only a very few goddess advocates in the United States actually writing for the Examiner. You can find them by going to theexaminer.com and putting my name in the search box. What will happen when you do that is articles by me or about me will pop up, or you can go to my website. At the very top of the home page, you'll find a link to the Examiner column. I quite often talk about the politics of spirituality, whether we're talking about health care or sexism or the inhumanity of some political platforms that put profits before people. And you know who I'm talking about, those Republicans. Because, like Rhian Eisler said, my mentor and Starhawk agreed, and so many of us know, if goddess had to choose a political affiliation, given the choice between Democrats and Republicans, it would be a no-brainer. She would be Democrat. And did you know there are free downloadable meditations on my website, too? While you're there, on the Goddess Store page, which is where the free meditations are, please check out my two books. I don't know if you know, but I am an author, besides being a radio show host and tour leader. My books are Sacred Places of Goddess, 108 Destinations, which has garnered prestigious endorsements, and Walking an Ancient Path, Rebirthing Goddess on Planet Earth, which won a place as a finalist in the USA National Best Books of 2008 Awards, and the Spirituality column. And a scholar has said of the book that not only is it immensely pleasurable and an enlightening journey, but it stands boldly against the patriarchal denigration of the divine feminine. Well, that was probably the best compliment he could have given me, because that is my mission in life. On my events page, take a look, see if I'm appearing in a town near you, see what talks I have available to give your group. There's a page about that. There's also articles and links referring you to people around the world making a difference, so you can sort of learn about this web of goddess spirituality out there all over the globe. And if you will, please take advantage of the offer I have on my website in the Goddess Store for listeners. Both my books are $25 plus shipping and handling, and that's actually better than you can do on Amazon for new books. And now remember, here on Blog Talk, we can take your caller questions. So if you like, dial in and ask questions. Or what you can also do is email me in advance, and I will definitely ask your question of my guest. And you can also talk to me about the topics during What's the Buzz segment. And if you want to write the phone number down, it's 718-766-4662. We still have a little bit of time left on the show, so if you want to call in, if I see your phone number come up on the switchboard, I'll say hello and we can chat. And if you can't listen live and don't want to be on the air, you can, like I said, always email me your questions, so you're not left out of the loop at all. And one day I'm going to try to get the chat room going. I'm a multitasker, but it's really hard to stay engaged with my guest and chat with people at the same time, too. Maybe one day I will get a co-host. But anyway, keep tuning in each Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific. Don't miss us. In fact, you can join Blog Talk as a listener and have reminders sent to your email box of our shows so you won't forget about our awesome guests each week. And please, if you're a fan of the show, please indicate that on my show page by selecting us as a favorite there on Blog Talk Radio. Well, it's time for tonight's evening prayer. The show is about to come to a close for another week, and I invite you to sort of just settle into that, you know, that place within. Close your eyes and take a deep breath. Bring yourself to a deeper focus, and just sort of let everything else fade away, and you know, just listen to these lovely words. I often read prayers that listeners have sent me, or I'll read the monthly prayer that the Goddess Temple of Orange County sends out. And the prayer for this month honors our beloved pets who make our lives so much more rich. And the prayer goes like this. Great Goddess, I am one with all the noble beings of the earth. I am in gratitude for all they bring to my life and to the world. Bless the beasts. Ashi. Well, to say goodbye for another week, I'd like to leave you with one of my favorite musical pieces. I think I promised I was going to leave you with something by Leah Scallion, and I think what I'm going to play for you tonight is called The Breath of Life from her Song of Sirius CD. It lasts about 5 minutes. And I want to thank you for tuning in before I go and turn on the music. I hope you'll be back with us next Wednesday at 6 o'clock. And until then, remember the expression from The Mysteries of Isis sent in to me by Michael. And Michael, you know who you are. The expression is be of good courage. That's the thought I'd like to leave you with until Monday. So good night, and may the great she embrace you in her golden wings. And you're listening to Breath of Life by Leah Scallion from her Song of Sirius CD. And here it goes. Me. Mm-hmm.